Good morning, everyone. Let me go ahead and call the study session to order. This is Thursday, November 30th, 2006, our 7:30 a.m. study session. We have 10 items to go through. The first is to review items on the agenda for the December 4th regular council meeting. And I'd like to go ahead and turn that over to the vice mayor. I'm going to be calling in on that meeting, and the vice mayor will be running it here from the city of Mesa.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll start on page one. And I don't know if you want to amend the presentation, but we will have somebody here from MesaCan Prehab to accept the weatherization. Who does the agenda? Who should I be looking at right now? Carla. Where's Carla? Well, we'll get the word to Carla. She might want to amend the agenda to include on the presentation that the City of Mesa Utilities Department is actually going to be picked up by MesaCan Prehab. Okay, anything on page one? Page two. Yes, Mr. Summers.
I believe we still have some concerns. Am I on the right one? General plan major. So this is items 3A and 3B on the alignment of Ray Road and Ellsworth. Is it Ellsworth? Have those been resolved? Are we going to be able to get those issues discussed before Monday?
Mayor and Council, we have a couple of things that we're still working on with regard to the Major General Plan Amendment. As you know, we've had a revised project narrative that's been submitted on that just this last week that staff is still reviewing. We do have some issues that we're further reviewing with regard to the alignments of primarily Ellsworth, but also Ray Roads and how those will interact. Still looking at a couple of the other land use impacts that are going on there with these last changes. And so our recommendation at this point would be that we continue this item to the December 18th meeting, still gets it in this year as it's supposed to be. Our general plan itself, as we've looked back at a little bit more closely, says that the council is to hear and consider in one meeting the major general plan amendments. We've kind of maybe read over that previously. It's not quite consistent with state statute, but that's what our plan does say. And we're concerned that we won't really be ready to take action on Monday. And so to be consistent with the general plan, we ought to delay the hearing and the consideration to the 18th.
So once the hearing has been posted, are we okay with continuing that to the 18th?
Continuing to a date certain, yes, Vice Mayor.
Okay. Is there any concern on the part of other council members about that? Council Member Griswold.
Have we talked to the applicant about this?
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold did call them yesterday afternoon and gave them a heads up that that's what we would be recommending at this point, so they're aware that that's where staff is going.
And their comments were?
Their comments were, we would like to get it heard, but they did think they'd have a lot of heartburn waiting 2 more weeks as long as it got done.
As long as everything was settled and roads were settled and all the rest. Okay.
I think their concern is making sure it gets heard in this calendar year so that they don't have to go through the process for another year. The other advantage that that would give us is that the mayor will be back in town. So I think that that's a positive. Are there other comments on this? I have a question, but maybe that's what you're about to address.
Vice Mayor, I did hand this out and they didn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
We have done a little bit closer study here based on their revised numbers of what the comparisons are percentage-wise with the various land use categories. And you can see, just looking at it quickly, in terms of the residential, they're going from 13% of the overall area to 30% being residential. The mixed-use employment goes from 18 to 23% of the overall area. The mixed-use residential goes away totally. Regional commercial, there's none now. It would be 5% of the area if this is approved. Community commercial goes from 2 to 6%. Business park, there is none currently, goes to 33%. And the light industrial goes from 61% to 3%. So this gives you, based on the latest, that percentage breakdown of the land uses.
John, could you give us a little context on that? Because I think one of the important things is to make sure that in the broad scheme of things that we maintain, you know, our M1, M2, that we make sure that we have that available for development in the whole Williams area.
Vice Mayor, that's been one of the things that staff has been looking at. And when we look at the city as a whole and then this area, most of the M1 light industrial designated area is around the airport. There's not a lot of good areas elsewhere in the city for true industrial type development as there is around the airport property because of all the impacts from the airport itself, the transportation system, the rail system that's available in that area. So one of our concerns has been, if we give up the light industrial here for a different type of employment, are we losing something significant? We are getting a lot of employment back, and it's high-quality employment, so maybe we're okay, but it won't be the same type of employment. We want to make sure the council considers that as they look at this.
And I think part of the consideration is that we need to, as we look at this plan, then we need to think about the next people who come forward, that, you know, we send out a pretty clear message that says we're not going to be changing all of our light industrial to something else. So, you know, while this is a great project, and it's looking, they've made the changes that we've asked for, and you know, it seems to be moving forward in a good way, that doesn't mean that every project that comes forward that's currently M1 or M2, that we're going to be looking at changing those. So I think that's another piece of it. Any other? Mayor?
Well, one thing I'd like to do is evaluate again the whole process so that we can give input earlier on. I think that to go out and do some of the hearings and then come back to the council and we have suggestions and not be able to make substantial ones without them having to take another year, that process has to be reevaluated.
Yes.
So let's make sure that's on the calendar somewhere. Right. Yes.
Mayor, I believe we have that scheduled tentatively now for study session on December 21st. Because we do, and we agree. I think that we need to have the opportunity for the council to weigh in early in the process. Right now, it kind of precludes that opportunity. So, okay.
The other aspect is, if this is approved, it would appear as if the southern part of the airport, arrival and departure corridors, will be somewhat established as far as where residential can go and cannot, especially if we use that freeway close to the airport as a barrier. Still have to, you know, protect the other industrial uses we have there and figure out how they're going to be configured on the south. But if, in fact, the General Motors to the north 3,000 acres has sold and there's a three-year lease and a couple of options and it's going to develop, we really haven't figured out what that southern boundary is. The northern boundary has been the power lines, but there hasn't been a transition in the southern boundary. And how do you arc that out to get that fly-friendly, and where is housing appropriate and where is it not? And it's kind of the stage 1, 2, and 3 if you go through noise contours. You know, I think we need to work with the users at the airport to make sure that the airlines, Boeing, who has a presence, anyone else that's currently using that with the helicopters and the rest, bring them in with our master plan for Williams Gateway on the aviation update and somewhat work our land use master plan in with theirs. So that airport is sustainable for an aviation use. And I think that's the one major departure route that we have not locked in, at least that south boundary. So that would just be comments on this major plan amendment.
Scott.
And to address that, Mayor, I've had some discussions with DMB. I think we can say that now, can't we? Who will be purchasing the north half of the GM proving grounds on getting the city and the stakeholders around the Williams Gateway Airport, including the airport folks themselves, in on the planning of that northern half early, so that we make sure that they develop a good product, they can be profitable from it, but that the city has input, we can protect our assets and the navigation easement and create the type of development that we're really hoping for there with a high jog-resident ratio. So I'm really encouraged by DMB. I know John met with them recently this week on the same topic, and they sound very positive, so I'm looking forward to working with them.
Okay. And I know Williams Gateway is going through a master plan amendment update. It's been 7 years, so they're going to be doing that, so that one works. And if we do a transportation master plan also, that'll give us some of the street corridors, because that's been, having had the joint meeting with Queen Creek last night, that's kind of one of the blocking factors for the north-south traffic, which hopefully we can get some arterials through there and alleviate some of those bottlenecks. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else on page 2? We have a minor plan amendment that continue a hearing.
Will that continue then?
Yes, that will be on the agenda for continuous. Or Debbie, we need to do it date certain continuance, so it will be continued to the December 18th City Council meeting.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Minor plan amendment hearing, and then moving on to page 3, Council Member Griswold.
Just a request for staff. I don't know if they've done or not done it, but I haven't seen any reports on any of these liquor license applications on any police reports at these locations. I'd like to have that included in our data when we make decisions on reissuing liquor licenses.
Councilmember Summers?
I'd be interested in seeing that as well, particularly have they had any sales to minors and cited for that. Although I will admit it, I do believe that ours is only recommendation to the liquor board. So understanding that, even if we were to vote no, it still has to go to the liquor board for final decision. So this is not the decision-making body, am I correct, for liquor licenses.
But we do get to make a recommendation.
Yes. So.
Councilmember Whalen.
You're talking about 7A. We just approved that 2 weeks ago or a week ago. That's the case where we went for allowing a bar license in a C3. So we've had the background on that. We've had the neighborhood meetings. And this is just now the formal changing of it.
Okay. Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, it was just a general comment. It wasn't picking on any one of these. I think all these are no problem entities. Just the future, I'd like to see if there is a problem entity. I wouldn't know, just reading through them.
Okay, is there a problem with our getting that? Is that a...
My understanding is the council's looking for, have there been any citations against these individuals? Those citations would be public, and convictions. Those would be public record. But I'll talk to the individuals to see what their understanding of what information we collect regarding this.
Okay, and previously, while Jenny's coming up, previously I had requested that when we get these requests for one-day event licenses, that if they have not been considerate to their neighbors when they previously had them, that we should be made aware of that.
Vice Mayor Walters, I guess our question from staff is do you want that on the council agenda? Because we do have that information under adverse information in your packet. There's nothing on these particular applicants because they didn't have any.
So normally you would place that, if there were something, it would be, I'm getting a nod from the back here. Okay, so you would have placed that where we look under adverse conditions.
Information, yes.
Information, it would have been in there. Did you want it... Are you looking for it to be straight on the agenda?
No, I'm looking for it to be there. Just in 4 years, I've never seen adverse, and I can't believe no one's ever had a violation. No one's ever sold to minors. No one's ever had loud party complaints next to their one-day event. And for 4 years, I've been getting no adverse. And I know some of these. Some of these are friends of mine. So there may be some difference from the information I'm getting. So.
What are you saying about your friends?
Yes.
His former friends.
I'll clarify that. Since the direction that we received a few weeks ago from Councilmember Walters,
Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that, Jenny. Okay. Anything else on page 3 or page 4? Page 5. Moving on to contract. Page 6. More contracts, and we have the introduction of ordinances setting December 18th. As the public hearing on the ordinances, Councilmember Rawls.
On pages 5 and 6, the first four contracts on page 5 are all Homeland Security grants. I'm just wondering whether we could extend that to the carpeting for the Mesa Convention Center. No? No? Okay.
Gosh, if you'd been wearing your black hat, they might have said yes.
That's an anthrax.
I don't know. Are you following all the news out of London right now? Page 6. Mr. Wesley.
Vice Mayor Walters, council members, under the introductions, 2 weeks ago we were before you with the application for Stonebridge and requested a continuance of that zoning case and development agreement for 2 weeks or for 4 weeks in order to introduce a second ordinance because of the work that's being done there with a slight change to the site plan to move the schools, and so we should have on here, and we'll have for Monday, that introduction of that second ordinance. We didn't have it quite ready for this packet when it came out, but it will be added and will be on your agenda for Monday.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on page 7? Councilmember Jones.
On 90, because of work I'm doing for an involved party, I need to declare a conflict of interest. 9D.
D, dog?
D as in dog.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Griswold.
Maybe I'm just getting old and remembering. I watched the planning and zoning meeting. I thought 9C was denied, and it comes here recommended. That's maybe my just confusion watching the interplay back and forth. That was the meeting that went to, I think, midnight or so.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, it was on that long meeting agenda at that time, was continued, and then came back at the last PNC meeting at that point that made some changes and is recommended for approval.
Okay, the changes are. Thank you.
Wow, I bet you're feeling better. Page 8. Page 9, we're still on. Page 10, I'm sorry, at the bottom of page 9, item number 10 will be, this is a cable TV renewal license. We have the hearing at the beginning. This is a really small cable TV operation. We have about 100 residents who are impacted by it. But the thought is that in the future, it's going to grow. So watch out, Cox, huh?
Vice Mayor.
Yes, Councilmember Whalen.
Back on page 8, I need to declare a conflict on 9G.
Okay,
hey,
anything?
Mayor. On 10A, I see that the percentage is 4.5. Is that when we entered into an agreement with Cox, is where we required to do all cable licenses at 4.5 instead of the 5% that's allowed by federal?
Yes, we. Mayor Hocker, we modeled this license after Cox and Cable America with the same conditions. The only difference is the trigger and the number of customers, since they're very small. Actually, they're very small just in Mesa. They mostly, most of their customers are on the eastern end of the county. So Eagle West, this is a renewal. They've been with us before. They aren't any larger than they were 5 or 6 years ago. So we have just modeled it exactly like we have the Cox. The trigger is 2,500 customers. When they reach 2,500 customers within the city of Mesa, then we would trigger the local emergency notification and things of that nature. But the percentages they give us right now, the revenue we receive is very low, around $700 a quarter.
Right. But the reason not to have 5% was because our other agreement had been 4.5.
That's right.
Right. Did we also do that with Cable America when they were still here?
Yes, we did.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on page 10? Page 11. I was going to bring a prize for anybody who had read every single word of every building code thing that was in there. But. Oh, wait. Whalen has his hand up. Yeah.
Just so you know, that I think the mayor and I have a conflict on 10F.
That's the downtown?
Mm-hmm. It's off, but just so you know.
Right. Thank you. Anything else on page 10, page 11, page 12, page 13, and we're done.
Insurance.
Back to you, Mayor.
Item number 2 is an update here on the effects of the traffic control changes on Baseline Road near Rhodes Junior High School.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger from the Transportation Department. With me is Renee Aim. I'd like to give you an update this morning on the traffic control changes been made on Baseline Road near Rhodes Junior High School. You'll recall last January, the Council asked us to come back in 6 months to give you an update on the impact that these traffic control changes have had on speed. So we're prepared to do that today. Renee's going to briefly highlight the changes that we made out there, and then she'll go over some of the speed data that we collected under a variety of conditions. So I'll turn it over to Renee.
Thank you, Dan, and good morning, everybody. just like to orient you quickly on the area that we're talking about. Rhodes Junior High School sits here just north of Baseline Road. That's east of Dobson Road. Between Pennington and Longmore is where the school sits. The school zone where we made the traffic control changes extends from west of Pennington to east of Longmore, so the entire frontage along Rhodes Junior High School. The traffic control changes that were made at different times, but within a very short time span, so for all intents and purposes, the changes were made at the same time. Because the changes were made at the same time, you really can't isolate which changes had the most significant impacts, but we surmise that they had to do with the active traffic control devices, which were the yellow flashing lights and the driver's speed feedback signs. The changes that were made were extending the hours when the 35-mile-per-hour reduced speed limit is in effect to extend now for 13 hours of the day from 7 in the morning till 8 p.m. on school days. Yellow flashing lights were added to draw drivers' attention to the fact that it's 35 miles per hour when the lights are flashing. A driver speed feedback sign was added to the first sign assembly at the start of the school zone to indicate to drivers what their speeds are as they enter the school zone. We added more and larger school advance warning signs. We added reflective strips to the post holding those signs. And lastly, we added end school zone signs to more clearly define where the 35 mile per hour speed limit ends. This is a photograph of the signs that were there before the changes were made, and these were the static signs that we still have at 11 other locations that have these reduced school speed limits. The first sign assembly is at the start of the school zone. The hours before the change were from 7:30 until 4 p.m. on school days. We had another sign.
Is that shade on there or is that dirt?
No, that's shade.
Shade? Okay. Just checking.
It was early in the morning on my way to work.
All right.
The other sign is in the middle of the school zone.
Okay.
Those have been replaced now by these assemblies. At the start of the school zone, we now have the yellow flashing light assembly. The sign now says 35 miles per hour when flashing. And below that sign at the first assembly, this is the driver speed feedback sign, which has a radar unit in it and monitors speeds as they're approaching, so drivers can see what their speeds are and hopefully shame them into driving 35 miles per hour. In the middle of the school zone, we've replaced the static sign with this assembly, which is the yellow flashing as a reminder, still 35. The other changes we made is, this is the school advance warning sign I was talking about. We added this sign into the median, and we made these signs larger. They used to be 2.5 feet in width. They're now 4 feet in width. The strips were added to the posts that hold these signs, and that's just a shot of the end school zone sign. The data collection was done by our data collection contractor, and we used road tube technology. We collected speeds in the curb and median lanes in both directions. And in all situations, we collected the data at the same location, so that didn't change. And we took that right in the middle of the school zone. We have a number of these charts in the council report, and I'm just going to quickly explain what it is we're seeing here. On the x-axis is the time of the day, so for a 24-hour day period, we can see how the traffic speeds change in 15-minute time intervals throughout the day. Each of these bars represents the 85th percentile speed of traffic in that 15-minute time slice. The 85th percentile speed statistic is used as an indication of what most drivers would find to be a reasonable speed limit, and it's the speed at or below which 85% of drivers are traveling. This is our baseline before conditions. So in October of last year, before the police did some intense enforcement out there, we collected speeds for 2 days. During the time period where the 35 miles per hour is in effect, we had an 85th percentile speed of 46.6. when the speed limit is 35, so not too good. During the other hours when the speed limit is 45, the 85th percentile speed was 48.2. The next month, the police had done some intense enforcement out there. They had a 3-week campaign where the photo radar van was out there almost every day. They were issuing citations, and you can see there was a dramatic reduction in these speeds. So police enforcement is a very effective tool. the 85th percentile dropped by about almost 6 miles per hour. And you can see how dramatic that change was. In all likelihood, the photo radar van was out there in the morning where you see the significant drop. I know it was out there for part of the day, but I don't believe they were out there for the whole day. We also took some data in the summer when school was out of session to get another baseline measure of the traffic speeds out there. And you can see that when the speed limit is 45 miles per hour throughout the day, the speeds are fairly constant. The most recent data that we took was in September, about 4 weeks after the start of the school session and 6 months after these devices were installed. And you can see that there's been, again, a dramatic reduction in the speed during the time when the flashers come on. And it's a dramatic decrease now because when the flashers hit at 7 o'clock in the morning, drivers know. It's not, my watch is 7:35, I don't have to go 35 yet. So there's a dramatic decrease. And it stays quite low throughout that time period. At 6 p.m., you can see speeds are starting to creep up again. It's likely due to the fact that there aren't very many children out there. There might not be activity at the school, so drivers are wondering, why is it flashing? At 8 o'clock when the flashers stop, again, there's a noticeable jump back up. The good news is that for these 13 hours, the 85th percentile speed is 39.6. That's better than it was in November when we had the intense police enforcement campaign out there. These are normal levels of enforcement. This last slide pulls together all of the before and after speed data that's been collected for this project so far. We've already talked about the first two blocks. What we're seeing here, the lighter shade bars in the foreground is the 85th percentile speed during the 35 mile per hour time period, and the darker bars in the background is the 85th percentile when the speed limit is 45 those other hours. In addition to that September data collection period, we also collected two other sets of after speed counts, and you can see they've been quite consistent. In April, that was 2 weeks after the installation of the flashing lights and the driver speed feedback sign, we were down to 39.1 miles per hour. So now that it's September, we've had them in place for about 6 months. They've creeped up a little bit by about a half a mile per hour. We're hoping that isn't going to continue to be the trend, but we're going to be monitoring speeds in the future, and we'll be back to this committee in 6 months to give additional data, but we intend to follow this for quite some time just to see what's happening to the speeds.
In addition to the update today that we've given you, City Council asked us last January to give a 12-month follow-up to look on a citywide basis on how we want to handle some the other schools. So we're prepared to come back in April 2007. We'll give you an update on baseline at Rhodes to make sure we'll continue monitoring speeds and make sure we're still having an impact out there. We will review the dual speed limit guidelines and criteria with you on a citywide basis, and I believe we'll be proposing some treatment options for some of the other arterial streets adjacent to schools. So with that, this is a non-action item. It was for your information only, but we're happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, I've had these same requests on Power by Brown, by Fremont Salk, where we had small signs behind trees versus flashing lights where you're going 45 and all of a sudden you don't realize it's a school. There's a big median there. Right. So anything we can do to make people aware that there's a school there, especially if you're a tourist, and have flashing lights seem to work really well. And it's better to see a flashing light in a sign than a flashing light behind you in your rearview mirror. So,
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, we've been contacted, too, by the legal counsel for Mesa Public Schools. I advise them that's one of the sites we'll be looking at for some possible treatment.
Okay. Councilmember Jones.
I appreciate the data, and it's very informative, and I do want to congratulate you because an issue that's important to me is returning and report to have a set time to come back and bring us data, because too often things kind of get lost and they drag on and we don't get a report. So having a specific set time to report back, I think, is very important, and I thank you.
You're welcome.
Vice Mayor Walters.
Thank you. I was curious about one thing on the council report, and that said that for speeds greater than 51 miles per hour, the speed display goes blank.
Mm-hmm.
Now the problem I have with that is that how does the person then, I mean, what unless I know that that happens at speeds greater than 51 miles an hour, I just think the machine isn't working. Why doesn't it go bright red? Why doesn't it start screaming?
And see how fast they get it.
The blank thing seems bizarre to me.
That's actually pretty standard. What other jurisdictions have found is that a lot of drivers were trying to stunt, see how fast they can go to get that speed up. So to deter that, we cut that out.
It's a drag strip.
Mm-hmm. It becomes a drag strip. It becomes, let's see how fast I can go to get the numbers high. So
okay.
The speed limit is 35. The sign is on until 50, which is a 15-mile-an-hour spread. And if you're going faster than that, we're not going to show that to you on that sign. So it is a purposeful strategy. We have the capability to program it otherwise, but that was the advice of the contractor and other jurisdictions, so it happens.
It's too bad that at that point, photo radar doesn't smack them, you know?
It would be.
That would be a whole lot better from my perspective. And I think we should give thanks to Mr. Casey for the work that he did on bringing this forward. So thank you.
So you could actually install a speed on green or speed at and take photos at that location if you wanted to.
Correct. Yes, Mayor, the technology is there. It's a matter of coordinating with the police department and council, having that be council's direction.
Okay.
I'd suggest we bring this back to police committee and let's check with the vendor and see how much it would cost to do that.
Good suggestion, especially if you knew there. Would you know how many times that occurred?
You should have the data.
Would that? I see some of the spikes in here. It looks like it, but I don't know what creates a spike on this on your chart. So, how many times does it go over 50? Would that be a hard number?
That is something we can capture. I don't believe we have that right now, but it is in the data. We could pull that out and find out the spikes and how many, for example, are going over 55 or over 60.
Right. Well, when we do other school zones, I think that's a great suggestion to take a look at.
Just if we're going to proceed with it, I mean, the controversy now is on the cameras on the 101. It's interesting, since they shut those down, they've had tremendously high speeds and high numbers. So they're going to do a study on that by the end of the year. But
I always thought the 101 was kind of interesting. We'll send you a reminder that you are going, you know, such a speed over the limit. It's like, well, and then on a certain day we'll enforce it. I thought that was kind of a bad policy myself. But
it might be a good pilot for us to look at other fixed locations within the city also where we've got huge speed.
Good. Why don't you go ahead and check with the vendors on cost to do kind of a speed on green or speed over a certain limit, photo radar at those locations?
Mayor, we'll work with the police department on that.
All right. And let's collect that data, and when you look at other junior high locations, let's bring that back at the same time.
Yes, sir.
All right. I did have a question, just out of curiosity. What happens between 2 and 3 a.m. that they actually start slowing down? Is that the bars releasing?
No, the volume is quite low, so that statistic at that time is quite skewed, and we have traffic signals at both ends, so if you happen to be slowing down for a traffic light, it's going to be abnormally low. There just isn't a lot of traffic at that time of day. So
okay, but what traffic there is must be pretty slow.
And it could be because of the traffic lights, yes. You're right.
Okay. I just saw that spike in there, and I was curious on what was causing it.
And it happens all of the time in all of the data.
It's not that they're slow. It's just taking them longer to get where they're
weaving down the lane to get there. Right. I hope not. All right. Thank you very much for the update. And I concur. I like the policy of if we're going to do something, let's go back and evaluate it and make sure it's effective. Item number 3, discuss, consider, and provide direction on city council committees, including the following, and that's almost one of the items we started to talk about. How do you refer things to subcommittees? The appointment process is the first. That has been established as for committees. I'm not sure it's been a formal one, but every 2 years I've always tried to rotate the chairman and the committee members, have at least one committee member stay on the committee and then rotate the chairman into another out of the chairmanship and into another subcommittee so that as council members you get the broader experience from different being on different committees and chairing different committees. The other one that I know what has been talked about is combining committees, especially the public safety. Scott, you've brought that up a number of times. The process for developing the agenda for them, I believe currently it states in there that they are, if there is a topic that's suggested, it can be referred to that subcommittee by the mayor, and I assume also the city manager would fit in that category, but it doesn't specifically say that. And I think there's a, I think I read a, is there a resolution or something to that effect in here? It's an, actually an ordinance number 4607 that's in our packet. That's the one that established the committees that we currently have, the six working committees. And then the last line of that is, each committee shall be responsible for such matters as may be referred to it and shall meet at such times as may be necessary to take care of matters referred to it by the mayor. So that's currently how it's established. And then the areas of responsibility, some of the names of the committees are self-evident on what they're responsible for, and then the general development committee was kind of a little bit of a catch-all if there was something that didn't fit in, is historically how that's worked. This was a retreat item that was suggested that it come back and that we look at this. Item number four, the next item below, is actually whether we want to do an ad hoc committee to look at it in more detail or whether we want to go through some of the discussion items here this morning and see if an ad hoc committee is necessary or what changes we want to make. So why don't we just open it up for discussion with that introduction. Want to hit them in order, the appointment process, or hit all kind of however you want to do it? Vice Mayor?
I didn't really have an... I'm fine with the appointment process the way it is right now. I don't think we've been exactly following what it says in 4607, given that chairs have referred things to their own committee or people who are on a committee have requested that things are on a committee. And I know there have been times, Mayor, when I've sent something to you and said I would request that this go to a committee when I'm not on the committee, or I've requested it of the committee chair. But I think that that one ought to be changed so that it addresses the ability of the committee chair or the members of the committee to place something on their own agenda that is in reference to their committee. Not that you, I don't think you, we should have it so you can put anything you want on your agenda. It should have to be relevant to the committee that you're, that you have. But it just makes sense to me that if you're the person working on that, that you ought to be able to do it. And frankly, as a matter of practice, I think that's happened. I could be wrong. Has everything been coming through you?
Usually if there's this, only if I somewhat disagree with the amount of work that they're trying to have or the topic that they want, or I'm on the utility committee and my neighbor's not getting the irrigation the way they should, so I want to do a full investigation of the whole, you know, this particular individual, I would not send that through the committee structure. Or, you know, if it's not reasonable, or at least in my opinion, not reasonable, then I'd usually have a further discussion or bring the city manager in or something to that effect. Have had very, very few incidences where I have not felt comfortable referring it to a committee.
I wonder
when it's been requested.
I wonder if there's a way, but I'm thinking, and maybe it's happened and I don't know about it, I ask for something to be on my agenda, so then somebody takes it to you and says, is it okay for Claudia, who's currently chairing, and it was, would have been last go-around transportation, has asked that we look at this issue. Did they then bring it to you?
That's one way. The other way is I have weekly meetings with the city manager, so we'll look at the scope of work and some of the pressing issues that are coming forward and try to prioritize what's important and staff load and how it fits into the flow of things. There may be some issues that we're going to do some type of a comprehensive study, so that issue would be addressed anyway. It's a subcomponent of that.
Okay.
But I, if I was a, when I was a council member on the other side of this, I would have some things, especially if, on finance and other things, that I'd be more aggressive and want to get done. They require a lot of staff time, and they also require some funding. So some of it needs to be a request if it's going to take some money to staff and do the research. so that it actually fits through some type of a budget cycle, so that all council members get to determine where is the money spent, and if one committee wants to, you know, do a comprehensive study of selling off the electric utilities or gas or combining them, that's a pretty, you could send it to a committee structure, but in order to get the data for them to make a decision, it's going to cost a lot of money. So maybe you send it, and then once the money issue comes up, you agree to hold that off until there's a budget cycle so that it can be submitted in proper channels. I'm not sure how to work that, but I'm not real comfortable with just the mayor being the one that can do it. I think that at some point, if you have a mayor that wants to obstruct the process, they could do that. And if I was a committee chair, I wouldn't feel comfortable being on the other side of that. So I think if there's maybe the entire committee is looking at that issue and not just the chairman or something, or maybe some other way to tweak this a little bit so that you can get things moving.
Yeah, kind of like we do right now. If three council members want something on the agenda, then you can do it. So if there were two people on the committee who, now the problem is they couldn't talk to each other. It would just have to be that you wanted to discuss it, not what you were going to discuss.
Well, it could be discussed at a couple different places. First, it could always be discussed at the committee meeting that we want to see this issue on the agenda for the next meeting. Second, simply discussing that you want it on the agenda does not violate the open meeting law. It's going beyond that and expressing your concerns or your intent with regard to the issue, which could trip the open meeting law.
Okay. Mike?
Potential problem with that in that over the last year or so, we've had policy with the previous committees have approved, and a chair of a committee has brought an issue back to that committee and reopened that door that caused more difficulty by reopening that door, gave some people some hope that there was something going to be changed. I'm a little concerned that just the chair can bring back something. And that's the way I think it worked in those instances. It was a utility committee issue, and the issue came back, and we had to reopen and re-debate a whole subject that was already closed. But if the entire committee wants to do that, then you know I think we can do that. But somehow it has to be
more than one person,
or maybe even more than two. Maybe the mayor needs to concur with what goes. I don't know.
I think there needs to be a way to get around the mayor.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be honest with you.
We've been trying to find the Kino.
We found a few. In New Zealand. Yeah.
I've been on the other side. I know how it works.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think you're right.
Right.
Do you want me to go through the rest of mine, or do you want to keep talking about this? Or
why don't we each kind of weigh in on all four of these, and then we'll see if we are in any type of an agreement, or whether we want to do another ad hoc committee to look at it further, or do a little draft from somebody can kind of take notes on the comments, and if you can gather the essence of what we're trying to do, that might help too. So why don't you go ahead?
Okay, so I would appreciate something that allows for a different process. So two members of a committee, or three members of a committee, one or the other of those, or the mayor, to put something on a committee agenda. Also, the issue of what goes on the agenda and what goes to the committees, I think that staff needs to have more certainty about that. For instance, if it has to do with either raising or lowering the rate of something, that needs to go to the finance committee. Mm-hmm. If it, and we've had some other things like that there needs to be some understanding on the part of staff about whether or not something has to go to a committee unless there is an emergency. But an emergency, isn't that, well, we waited a year and forgot to do this, and, there we've had genuine emergencies that have come up, but I really think that there ought to be some certainty for staff in terms of what needs to go to a committee and what doesn't. And then the other piece, and Kyle brought it up earlier, he and I were chatting about this last night after the meeting with Queen Creek, and that is that things go to a committee, and sometimes we're dealing with so much day-to-day in these jobs that we forget that we had that at our committee, and it's gone out someplace, and it's been lost, and a year has gone by, and we don't know what happened to it. And so, and something on the end of the agendas that talks about what the action item is. There's a concurrence with the committee members. What are the action items out of that committee? Who's going to cover them, and when are they coming back? When are we going to have a report back on those so that they don't go into outer space? And there seems to be this who's doing it, who's going to follow up, and what's the next follow-up piece of it? And just as an example, the Escobedo situation, I kept hearing, you know, staff doesn't know what to do with it. And I kept saying, I thought we said what to do with it. And it goes around and around. Well, if there were a date certain, and if it had been at the bottom of the agenda item, and I think it had gone to a general development committee, if it had triggered that to come back, then there would have been a report back mechanism, and you would have known what was happening with it, rather than it gets lost in all of the day-to-day things that we're all trying to get done. So those were my topics.
Okay. Mike?
I'm kind of confused on what the rule is on taking public comment at a committee meeting. It's kind of hard sometimes to say that we, by policy, don't take public comment and then we allow it. Maybe some clearer rules as to do we or don't we or why don't we. I think that would be one thing. And then possibly even one time a year having a joint committee meeting, such as in the area of public safety, maybe police and fire coming in together, because they're so interrelated, especially with the amount of Homeland Security grants we're getting and understanding that whole process, it might be behoove us to do that. I don't know whether we can do that because of if the charter allows us to do that. But that would put six members, and it would probably be a full council meeting, I guess, if it's or can you have a joint committee?
Could be some overlap to the members.
Just something that would – it seems like – having chaired both committees, once you're not the chair of that committee anymore, you really don't know what's going on within that area as much as you did before. And since public safety is so closely related, it might be a good idea to have just a joint informational meeting once a year or even twice a year.
Good comments. Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. Mike, I actually recommended when I first came on that you combine those two committees. For the very, very reasons that you were mentioning, the UASC funding is a good example of where the police and the fire department are both utilizing the same federal grant to achieve public safety needs, and there's a lot of interrelatedness. We're going to have one come before us in a couple of weeks on the 800 megahertz radio communication system. Police and fire are jointly working on that. As a committee item, you would have the police committee discussing it, the fire committee discussing it. It's really one item. So my thought on the public safety, fire, and police is to combine those, and that would open up a position to maybe, as an example, we have two airports, yet we have no committee for that. It seems we have a lot of issues coming around from both of our airports, and it might be worth having that position for an airport committee. But public safety, it seems, rather than the joint one, I would recommend that we combine those two committees into one. I don't think the workload in either one is too heavy, so we'll have one public safety committee, and then have and the airport one's an example. We might want to look at something else. Airports and transportation arguably could be the same thing. There are a lot of models in different cities where they have committees with certain responsibilities, and sometimes those committees aren't related. It could be parks and rec and airports, but that's where you send. There's multiple things that you could talk about in a committee. Maybe we want to look at what other areas that we're not addressing that maybe we want to address specifically. We have an aging population. This is just an example, but we have an aging population. Perhaps we need to have a committee on aging and how all of our infrastructure and services are addressing those needs. As far as the process and the appointments, I haven't noticed too much about that. I would like to see a clarification, not just for our purposes, for the general public. When I was first elected and started and came on, I started looking at these committees. There's no explanation of what they are, what they do. I mean, some you understand, police, fire, utilities, but the general development, you hit that one, and what the heck does that one do? Go on the website, go in our own material. I can't find anything
as a citizen, I have no idea what that means. So if we could explain it to ourselves and then maybe explain it to everybody else so they get it, that would be an advancement, too. Thank you, sir.
I think we're all trying to define it yet.
It's kind of the catch-all. So it's not just me.
No, it's kind of a catch-all committee. If there was some special project or something that didn't really fit, or you wanted some overlap between different expertise with council members.
And it does make sense. It's just not explained anywhere. Somebody just casually looking on, or the masses of folks watching us on cable tonight, they have no idea. Right.
As the new council member, the other thing that I was thinking about is the training. Would have been nice to know that if you're a new chair or a committee member, that there is kind of like we do an introduction on ethics and other things, so how to be, you know, things you need to know as a council member. But what do you need to know as a chair? What's available to you? The Public Power Association meetings, and there's different avenues of expertise that you can avail yourself to, some magazine subscriptions or whatever it might be. So something along those lines for a little bit of a briefing of the chairs and the council new council members on those subcommittees.
Scott? And to fit us into, we're doing transportation, maybe to get us plugged into MAG, maybe not on the committee right away, but put it on our calendars so that we can start going to those meetings as a new person particularly. I've been going to the Williams Gateway meeting to try to go to the MAG meetings if I can. But to have all that tied in so we can, we're going to have, what, four new council members potentially here in 2 years, to have that set up so that they can get up to speed very, very quickly would be helpful to the city for certain.
Okay. Good. Rex?
I agree. Councilmember Rawls brought up a few weeks ago that all fees ought to go through the financial, and I agree. The problem I have sometimes is the gray areas in between. If you're talking about a development fee, do you go through the development committee that affects the building, and do you want to hear from the building industry before you hear it in the financial? There's some gray areas I haven't quite come down to. Mm-hmm. There was nothing defined in general development committee, so I sort of invented it the way I wanted it to be, and helped to, you know, worked on building issues and development and zoning issues, those kind of things, and making some differences in the departments. But, yeah, it is a committee that you said, what do you do? And since no one told me, I sort of made it up. I'd like to maybe see it defined. It might be a better way to do it. And I tend to agree with an airport or economic development, you know, group, building, whatever you want to call it, but I think it could be done a lot better, structured. The other one that was nothing in writing is that something's brought to you and you get two votes, you refer it to the department, to the whole body. What if you only have one vote? Do you still, can you refer it to the entire council, or does it just die there automatically? It's sort of an iffy. Well, if I'm a strong chairman, I can take it anyhow, and if I don't want to and want to believe in the democratic system, it just dies right there. And maybe we did have five votes on the council, because the only two were on the committee. So those aren't spelled out. They're sort of, what do you want to do? And I maybe would have liked a little more guidance on that when I was brand new coming in. Public comment? Yeah. If you're a strong chairman and you want someone to comment, fine. If you don't want them to, you don't. I don't know if that's good. It's not spelled out. But I would like, you know, if you're having comments from the industry or comments from chamber, you'd like to be able to hear them, not saying you can't hear them. We're discussing something that affects your life, livelihood, but we can't hear from you. But I can call on you, but somebody who doesn't, you know, maybe I don't want to hear from, I don't have to call from you. That doesn't seem quite fair to me. I don't know. You should hear both sides of an issue there, but it makes longer meetings if you do that. Committee report, I really like that idea, an action and follow through and the dates. And I like three council members being able to put anything on any committee. I may not be on the police committee, but maybe I want something referred to them to look at. If there's three people, it doesn't have to be on the committee. I think they ought to be able to send it to the police to hear it, study it in more detail, then come back. If there's not that kind of support, maybe you don't need to waste the time in a committee to do that. Those are my ideas.
Okay. One of the things on public comment that they do at several meetings is kind of have a call to the audience whenever you want to do it. You can set aside 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and they it's kind of a first come, first serve, which isn't always the best if somebody's really trying to load something up. But that's been fairly effective at MAG, at least, to have some input on topics. And then if you are going to be referring forward, though, you're just voting to refer it, so they do have an option at the council to speak before it's considered. But by then they're not in the input process as much, so that's a good one. let's see, votes to move forward. The votes to move forward out of a committee, I think part of the reason that we get the minutes is if there's other people, it may not have gotten the votes from that subcommittee just because of the personalities, but it may have enough to get three or four people that want to talk about it at the full council meeting. So one of the ways that that happens is that I'll see it or other council members can see it and say, no, let's bring that forward. And I notice a lot of committees, even though they may be going to vote against it, want the full council to discuss it, so they move it forward in that manner. But that's not a kind of a policy that we've had, that everything moves forward. So when do you kill one and when do you move it forward is a great question. Other issues? Tom?
I think it's a little difficult this morning to just try to get consensus on this because there's a lot, we're touching on a lot of areas. So my preference would probably be to appoint an ad hoc committee to focus on some of these issues. I think that when I came on, I read the resolution, and it said, as a committee chair, I'm supposed to be responsible for things that are referred to me. I took that as a very passive role. I don't have any authority to do anything except consider that which is referred to me. So I didn't initiate anything. I didn't think I could. I think that needs clarification. I think Claudia has hit on the most difficult area, which is I sort of divided into two sections. One is how does staff know what to bring to the committee and when? And secondly, what's the role of the committee? Do we have to pass things before they go to the council as a whole? I just think we need guidelines. I think we need a policy and procedure manual almost. I hate to say that, but almost something like that so that we can have consistency with the way that all six committees operate, because I think they're probably operated six different ways by the six different chairmen. And so to me, to sit here this morning and try to build any kind of consensus toward that is very difficult, because I think it's a much more laborious, thoughtful process than what we're able to do with seven of us here without having had any really plowing of the fields beforehand. So to me, it's a perfect situation, and I think that before she says anything, I'll jump in and say that I'm going to volunteer Claudia to chair that ad hoc committee. And I see Chris over there blowing hard because he's thinking, oh boy, another committee we're going to have to staff. But I do think it's something that requires more than what we can accomplish in a meeting like this.
Usually when you recommend Claudia recommends you, so sounds like
that way we both two. Exclude each other and the rest of the other five can do it. But Claudia has, since I've been on the council, Claudia has talked about the uncertainty and the lack of clarity as to about what goes to the committee, when, results and things. And I think it's an issue that she has sort of tried to make her own to try to bring some clarity to the process. And I think I'd be happy to serve with her if she were to want me to, it has been her, at least she's the one that's talked about it the most with me about wanting to try to bring some concreteness to the process.
And now we can get into a discussion about who appoints the ad hoc committee.
I think that was pretty clear as to who does that.
Yeah, all right. I would say that I would do you, Tom, Claudia, and Scott, because you're the new member and not knowing quite how it all works, it would be good to get your input into it. So that would be my recommendation on the ad hoc committee, actually, if we go that route. Kyle, did you have comments?
When we talked about how do you bring something forward as a committee member and trying not to cross the line over what you can and can't do, is it possible just to draft a little brief letter saying, I'm interested in doing this, and if another member wants to, they could say, yeah, let's go ahead and put it on the agenda. I mean, we have to be careful where that line is. of how we move forward with that. But definitely, if there's something we want to bring forward, we can at least say, hey, I want to talk about it, but you don't want to go into any detail because we can't.
That's correct. That would be appropriate. Councilmember Jones, you could also communicate with the city manager that you would like to see this item brought forward to one of the committees, and he could organize that as well.
Okay. And another one of interest to me is there were many times as a committee chair that I had no idea what was coming up. It was just all of a sudden my calendar showed I've got a meeting, and I get an agenda, and here's what I'm doing. Yeah. It would be nice if we had communication, as we talked in our planning session, had communication with department chairs over which we're the committee chair, and know what's going on, what's possibly coming up. We can discuss things, say, do we bring this forward, do we not, instead of just waiting for staff to bring stuff to us. I think that would be a very critical point to have. I'm curious on Scott's recommendation of just having a public safety committee. We may even reduce to five, and vice mayor's typically got so much going, maybe not chair a committee. And that's just another possibility. Other issues of talking about what goes to what committee, don't know whether it should be something financial, as in, okay, utility rates. Utility committee looks at stuff, but if it's financial, where are we going to go with it? We need to really define that. I mean, it was interesting for me to read in the newspaper a while back that, oh, we're talking about selling the electric utility and doing this. It came forward in the finance committee, and the first I heard about it was in the newspaper. But wait, I was utility chair, and we never talked about anything like that in the utility committee. So anyway, those are some of the things I had concerns. So if you've appointed a committee, I'm sure they will approach each one of us to get some input, and we can move forward on this.
Okay. It looks like it's kind of the group's feeling that some type of guidelines are a whole lot better than what we have today, starting with probably definitions of the scope of the committee's work, and then look at the process for votes to move things forward and public comment amongst others, on just how to conduct the committee so there's some consistency amongst the committees. Those are some of the topics, and I'm sure there's other notes that an ad hoc committee could look at. So, Kyle?
As far as bringing something forward, the typical thing is if we have something we want to bring to the whole council and we want to put it on agenda, and you might see that and say, you know, let's run it to committee first, and then you would refer it that way. Because we can bring it forward many different ways.
Sure.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's two avenues. One is, and sometimes it's better to be fleshed out in the committee process, and sometimes it's going to be controversial. Much will bring it up to the full council because they're all going to want to weigh in on something. Mm-hmm. So, and those are kind of judgments that I'm not sure if I'm making them right or not. You just never know, but you kind of do your best. Vice Mayor.
I'd like to suggest that this ad hoc committee function with just one person assisting us on it, for instance, somebody like Rod Ross or somebody like that, rather than having a whole bunch of staff people come over. Let us just hammer this out and get some, and then we'll run it past staff after that. And I think we can look at what Phoenix is doing and what some other cities are doing. They probably already have some things we can, the old line from United Way, we only steal ideas from the very best. But the one thing that I would like to have a little more feedback on out of this whole group before we take it to the ad hoc committee is this notion of combining police and fire. I've been somewhat resistant to that notion because by having them separate, you get a greater exposure as a council member to the intricacies of that particular operation. And frankly, I liked serving on police and getting to know police. I liked serving on fire and being better acquainted with fire. And I'm concerned that what you're going to do is you're only going to have three people then who get that involved. So I sort of want to hear from everybody else on that, if that's okay.
I like keeping them separate. But I think the idea of having at least one joint meeting or two a year might be appropriate so that you can combine the efforts, especially with the Homeland Security. The other one is the ad hoc committee might want to just talk to police and fire and see what the advantage of combining those might be, or disadvantages. and then come back after you've heard from them. Tom?
Well, if the committee is going to consist of Scott, Bonnie and I, you've got one for combining, one for keeping, and one for neutral at the moment.
Perfect.
So I haven't really thought about that concept, so I'd have to think some more about it. But so I don't have an opinion yet, Bonnie.
Well, my mind could be changed on it. I'm just...
And it's the firemen recommending we combine them, which is really weird. So
right.
It means we give polygraphs to firefighters? Is that?
Oh, don't go there.
We're honest.
They're keeping it, but they're honest.
Mayor, let me bring this to the council's attention, if you haven't seen it already, because I think it does. We are trying to address some of the concerns we hear from council about what goes to committees and what doesn't. And it is somewhat difficult because sometimes things show up on your council agenda and I hear the comment, well, why didn't that go to committee? And so it is not very clear and many times. And then I think the council has to appreciate there are some issues, and granted we probably need to do a better job of planning ahead, but there are some issues that come up certainly in between the times the committees meet, and we will try to at least touch base one-on-one with the committees. But I've included in your packet the agenda items that are being considered for committees and study sessions through the end of this year, as well as pending list of issues that are not yet scheduled but are still pending from follow-ups from the council in the past, and I've added a few more just from conversations today. And you will also see in that list the committee meetings that are already scheduled, what's on those agendas today, what's already on those agendas through the end of this year. So we are trying to at least make all of the council aware of the committee's agendas, at least for the next 30 days or so, and we'll try to keep doing that. In addition, in your packet, we included the six committees, and we made it clear who the staff liaison who has been appointed to those committees, and what we would ask is that those individuals, staff liaisons and chairpersons, would work closely together to work on and whatever process there is to putting together the agendas and setting up those meetings so that we can make sure that we are supporting the committee as best as possible. So we've already tried to make some internal, I guess, adjustments and disclosures so that everybody can kind of see what is coming up ahead, not only for the committee members, but also for the full council. Thank you.
Okay.
I noticed that there are a few items that, and maybe it's because it's not for the December list, but I had some others that I thought were going to be brought forward, Chris, that I didn't see on the list. For instance, the issue of potential utility sale or partnership, I didn't see on the list. I don't see Escobedo on the list. I had requested that we look at the ordinance that Phoenix passed regarding DOC folks, and that's not on this list. So
sounds like it is now.
We're aware of those, and again, my point of making this list is when council kind of expresses sometimes a frustration that things aren't coming back fast enough, really becomes a priority of how we utilize the staff to prepare for those items, and then are they going to go through a committee first, then come back to the full council, and the capacity of time and effort, and I'm adding that to this list here. And frankly, what we probably, as much as anything, will need direction on, not only how does something get on the council committee agenda, but it'll become a prioritization issue. Because there's a long list here of things that others would say, well, that needed to be heard last month. Why haven't we heard it? And so all of these are important. It's just for a matter of stretching the resources of the staff so we can support it, make sure we do good staff work. And we'll keep adding to the list. It's just a matter of then maybe meeting with the mayor and trying to schedule those out into the future.
And I'm fine with that. I just didn't see them on the list, and I want to make
fair.
Sure they're on there.
And that's exactly why we put the list out, is so that those items can be good. Identified. So I appreciate that.
Tom?
Three things. One, I really appreciated the list of what was set up for the next month or so. Because as Kyle said, you know, you get a committee meeting, we get an email from Kim and says, can you make a committee meeting on such and such? I have no idea why my committee's meeting. At least now I know ahead of time what the topics are. Secondly, not only until this packet came out did I not know there was a staff liaison to each committee. I didn't know who they were.
So at least now I know that Jack is the staff liaison for the committee that I chair. I didn't know that.
Jack didn't vote either.
Jack, you were the result of the 6-1 vote. You got stuck with me. And then, Claudia, I noticed that you mentioned Rod having more work assignment, and he just came in to defend himself. He was watching in the other room and saw it and said, "Hey, better get over here before he got saddled with more work." So,
any other comments on this? Let's hit item number 4 then, which is the provide direction on appointment to the council ad hoc committee. We've kind of hit that a little bit. And I would suggest that it be Rawls, Walters, and Summers.
So moved.
Is your motion and second to that effect? Is that on for action? Provide direction, does that work? Or?
Probably best to take a vote since we already have a motion and a second.
All right, okay. I just wanted to make sure we could. So.
No.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
All right. Always did.
<I'm> in. Okay, item number 5. This was another one from the retreat. As you can see, I'm trying to get rid of my list of items to bring forward. And that was the quarterly council dialogues. I thought the some of the retreat items where you kind of, you know, what's the topic that is of you're passionate about and discuss with other council members or just things throughout the community that need attention. I think it's also been discussed as kind of a free-for-all, and so I'm not sure how you're going to quite post it. But I think that just to have an open and discussion amongst the council members would be worthwhile to do, at least. And I'm thinking kind of quarterly. But.
Mayor, what the open meeting law requires is that the agenda provide reasonable notice to the citizens of what's going to be discussed. So we've had some internal discussions on how we could agendize this to allow the council to have some free-flowing discussion and yet still meet the requirements of the open meeting law. One thing we had talked about is before we have this agendized quarterly, we have like the week before possibly, we have this on the agenda to ask council what issues might you want to talk about at this discussion so that we can have some level of notice to the citizens of what issues the council may discuss. And that way we can do the best we can to agendize it properly. As long as the discussion is related to those issues on the agenda, we can have that discussion. The question obviously is how far can you vary? If we just talk about airport issues, I think we can talk about a fairly wide or have a fairly wide discussion on airport issues because it would have to be something related to the airport issues. Obviously, I think the council's intent here is to have a discussion without taking actual specific items or taking action on items. Those items would probably come back, but my recommendation is still if we can place it on the agenda for the week before you're intending to have this open discussion so that we can get some idea from the council what items you would like us to list. And what I anticipate is the agenda item would be, say, something like quarterly council dialogues, including, and then we would have the A, B, C, and D, which would be the general items that the council would like to discuss at that time.
Tom?
I don't have any problem with the process that you've identified, Debbie, but I have a hard time believing that we couldn't agendize a meeting that says council is going to have an open dialogue on matters relevant to the city of Mesa.
And that might be sufficient
just,
because...
I mean, in the middle of one of these quarterly dialogues, we might be discussing something, and somebody might think, you know, that really makes me think about, and oops, I can't talk about that for 3 months. I mean, I don't think that was I just think we can be broader.
And we actually have the retreat, which is basically an open discussion.
No, it's not. We have a very specific agenda, and we noticed. I mean, it was a very detailed agenda. I'd like to see if we're going to have quarterly dialogues, if we're going to have free-for-alls, as the mayor describes them, let's have a free-for-all. Because, I mean, I can't sit here and tell you what's going to pop into my head in the middle of a discussion about the police, something in the police matter that I might think, you know, that makes me think of something that we can do with the streets, and maybe it needs to be discussed then. But if it's not, if I didn't think about it the week ahead of time and get it on the agenda, then I can't do it. And I'm not saying that will happen. I just think we ought to be able to have the freedom to let the people of this community know that we're going to sit around a table and BS and discuss whatever comes into our mind and engage each other in dialogue. And I don't think that needs to be point one, 1A, 1B, 1C agendized. I may be wrong, but I don't think that's the intent or the spirit of the open meeting law.
If the intent of the meeting was to see if there's some kind of concurrence to bring it back for full discussion with some other data collected to support or whatever the issue might be, I kind of agree with Tom. I'm looking for open discussions and not limited. I think that's a good starting point, but I wouldn't want to limit it to that. And I think that there will be some council members that have a issue that they're passionate about. I may have blocked them and said, not bringing it to the full meeting, you know, and they're trying to figure out if they've got some three or four other people to bring it forward without doing a survey of, let's see. So,
and that you can do at any time because you're not having a substantive discussion on the issue. You are simply raising the issue, I'd like to see this on the agenda.
Okay. I don't think we would ever get to a point, though, that we would vote to hire some person to do something. I mean, I don't think the idea of these dialogues is to get to an action on that meeting. I think it's to get to the point of, wow, there's other like-minded people on this. Why don't we pursue it in earnest at another meeting? I think that was more my intent of having the dialogue to see if there's a direction that a lot of the council want to go in, then we'll have a follow-up meeting and have some type of an outline that we can move on and not appropriate money or anything else at that meeting, but just to figure out where everyone's thought process is leading them and what's their observation of what's going on in the community and some corrective actions if they have some solutions. Rex.
I think Tom is absolutely right. If you want good government, open government, as long as everybody can listen to your conversations, we're not doing it in a back room. I think as much freedom you give it to make the city of Mesa better. You know, Tom makes a good point. We're talking about maybe agendized Escobedo, and we end up talking about should we be in the housing program at all. Now, that's not exactly agendized, but this is ancillary and very important to it and is a good discussion. Rather than having to stop at that point and put everything on hold and come back, have a dialogue and then maybe bring it back for a vote later, but be able to express your views and where you are and, you know, adamantly yes, no, or we need more data on this point, I think we'll get us better government. And I think we sometimes hurt ourselves, and I know you have to follow the laws, but the spirit of the law is most important. People want good government. Some of our own rules, I think, stop us from getting there. And I'd like to see if we've maybe put ourselves in too tight a box, if we can open that box a little more, but not doing anything in the except in the light of the day where everybody can watch.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
You know, I think the conversation we went through this morning is the same kind of conversation we could have in one of those discussions. We didn't decide what we're going to do about the council committees, but we had a lot of discussion about council committees.
Exactly.
Now, at some point in time, something's going to come back for us to vote on, and I have absolutely no clue how anybody's going to vote on that when it comes back. And there will be an opportunity for public input, and you know, people can say, well, that's the dumbest idea you've ever come up with, and you've sure come up with a few dumb ones, Claudia. But that's, I think that what they're trying to preclude is that you have made decisions without allowing public input, that you have made decisions behind closed doors. I don't think that conversation is what's trying to be precluded. So I think that the thing that we would have to be cautious of is not saying, okay, do we have four votes for that? You know, do we have four people who are willing to support that? Because once you've done that, I think you've absolutely violated the open meeting law. But I don't think we've violated it by having a discussion about what is good for the city of Mesa. And if we wanted to, I also don't think it's harmful to say, you know, we'd like to have a couple of specific things we'd like to be talking about in this one. These are the things that we want to be. But last night's agenda, I thought the last item on the agenda last night.
the weasel clause.
Yeah, it was something like anything else that relates in some way to the airport to economic development in Queen Creek. And, mm-hmm. and nobody really brought anything forward exactly on that one. Right, because we captured every one of them, but when I read it, I thought, this is one of the funniest agenda items I have ever seen. Because it captured that notion of there might have been something else that came up that somehow tangentially related to all of these other things and sort of captured what Tom was talking about. Maybe it triggered somebody else's idea and they wanted to bring it up, but we weren't acting on it. So I'm comfortable with that. Unless we hear differently from the AG's office, I'm comfortable that is well within the spirit of open meeting.
Well, when we have open discussion, I might express an opinion about something, and then as the discussion goes on, I might change that because of information that I get from everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a matter of, okay, I'm counting four votes right now. No, it's we're having an open discussion, and I can be persuaded that when I go into a council meeting, I don't always know how I'm going to vote on everything. I'm waiting to hear what people have to say, and I have changed the vote before during a meeting because of what I heard during the meeting. And so to have an open discussion is by no means, as far as I'm concerned, taking a vote on anything.
Okay, well, on the agenda is to discuss, consider, and provide direction. I think that I'm gathering that everyone is interested in doing quarterly dialogues. And I also feel that as broad as we can put it on and be within the legal confines, I think that if someone has a particular subject that they're interested in, the week before to suggest that be one of the things that is definitely included is fine, but don't limit it just to those items. Tom.
I think what my concern is if it came to a study session the week before and somebody wanted to raise something, did you have to have be persuasive enough and discuss it enough at the study session in order to get it on the agenda for the open meeting? And so then you're almost preempting, and it's like a precursor. You know, it's kind of like pseudoephedrine or something. But we can only do two. You can only do two a month. But the point is that I don't want to stifle it because you have to have it approved to get on the agenda. No. Which you don't want to have. Well, that's all I'm saying. So if somebody wants to make sure that we have an opportunity to talk about X at the quarterly council dialogues, then you can talk to Kino and get it on the agenda. But at the same token, if there's people just come and want to talk, it can be broad enough to cover that as well.
And I'm telling you, the approval process is everybody gets one.
Right.
So it's already done.
Right.
So put on what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, I think the direction is let's do them quarterly, let's keep it broad, and the week before, let's target an item if people have one. Otherwise, it'll be pretty much an open discussion about those items and other things that they may bring up that day. So check out if there's any legal stumbling blocks or things that you're aware of, then certainly call them to our attention. Otherwise, let's try to keep that broad, and we need to know that there will not be any decisions or votes taken at those meetings unless it happens to be one of the items that's submitted for discussion, consideration, and possible action. But other than that, it's just going to be open discussion by the council. Right. Okay, Chris, I guess that gives you direction on at least quarterly to start with. Let's plug in some study sessions for that item. Item number six is discuss and consider including on the December 4th, 2006 City Council agenda a resolution to refund City of Mesa utility revenue bonds.
Morning, Mayor and Council. With me is Larry Given, the City's financial planner from Peacock Hislop Staley and Given, financial advisor, I'm sorry. And Kathy Pace, the city's controller. Just when Kathy thought things were going to slow down in December after completing our audit work, Larry has identified the ability for us to enter into the market, hopefully next week, and do some refunding bonds on city's utility system revenue bonds. What we're asking is a little bit different than the way we've done it in the past. Due to your schedule next week where we do not have a study session, but yet we want to be in the market, what we're looking to do today is get your permission to put on Monday's formal agenda what we call a parameters resolution that sets a parameter that when we're out in the market, if we meet some specific criteria in the marketplace, we can then move forward and refund those bonds. Larry's here to talk in specifics, and I have passed around a little bit of a detail sheet that does go with your savings statement that we provided in your packet. So with that, I'll turn it over to Larry.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I'm Larry Given with Peacock, Hislop, Staley & Given. And as Brian indicated, we are coming to the council today to adopt a resolution under a new process for refunding bonds. And although the mayor has reminded me in the past, it doesn't really matter what other cities necessarily do. The way that refundings are done to a lot around the state, and I can tell you personally from experience, Maricopa County, City of Scottsdale, City of Chandler, City of Tempe, City of Goodyear, I can go on and on, City of Glendale, all have preemptive approvals given certain parameters being met in a bond resolution to do refundings. And what this does is it increases your flexibility in being able to access the market without having to make sure that there's a Thursday council session being taken place and then rushing to the council meetings, going to the mayor's office and say, can we please have a special meeting before the study session on Thursday and that sort of thing. We explained the refunding ahead of time as we are prepared to do today and at Monday's study session at the council meeting, what may be available out there in the process that we're going to undertake to get it done. And in this case, what we'd like to do is access the bond market next week with this refunding issue. Because there isn't a study session next Thursday, we wanted to talk about this approach, but we'd also like to see if possibly the council, we don't have to address it at this meeting, might be amenable to doing this in the future to increase flexibility. As an example, the Board of Regents, where we're active as underwriters, they actually adopt semi-annually resolutions like this to allow staff to undertake refinancings for that period of time without having to come back to them. So having said that, given current bond market circumstances, there's available to the city a refunding issue to effectively refund about $124 million of utility systems revenue bonds. At this time, it's put up on the board there on the ELMO. What we're asking in the bond resolution is that a parameter be set that the refunding bonds may be issued in an amount not to exceed $140 million, which would cover all the foreseeable bonds that I could see refunding at this time. And also the present value, net present value savings as a percentage of the principal amount of the refunded debt not be less than 2.75%. As you know, as a standard, we usually attempt to get 3% at least present value savings on these refundings. That's our target as well this time. But what I suggested to staff and to the bond council is that we have some leeway there. That is, we might expect to save $3.8 million at 3.1% right now, as in the detail below on your sheet on the board. If, however, bond market conditions change slightly and it turns out that we'd really be happy with the $3.3 million that we could get at this time, and we don't want to go back to council and have to change the resolution, the staff has the flexibility to do that. More likely, something like this would occur that we're at 2.99% present value savings, and we don't want to risk losing that savings because we violated by 0.01% your guideline. So, hope that explains the parameter resolution to you, but what this would do is after City Council action on Monday on the parameters resolution that would be presented and explained again to you at that time, we would be free to enter the market whenever. And what we would expect in this case is to go to market Wednesday or Thursday of next week and close the issue before the end of December. And I guess that covers us, Brian, on what we need to discuss.
And then, Mayor, what we would do, providing we meet these parameters, we'll then be back with you with the final results on both the net present value savings as well as our percentage targets and how we met those. One of the things I would identify, and it's listed at the bottom of your sheet, is that we anticipate right now, and I should also add that we may see better than 3.1%, the market could move. I think Larry said there's four trading days left in between now and when we think they're going to be, so don't really know what that's going to lead us to find. But one of the things we would like to do with those savings, at least at this point, we've identified trying to identify a targeted – these are going to be one-time resources that are going to be available to the city, and where could those best be placed. And right now what we're seeing is a significant need for utility vehicles and equipment out there for our staff to make sure that we're responding and have the equipment that's both current and doesn't have a lot of maintenance expense related to it, and identify that. Utilize these savings for replacement utility vehicles, or we're also looking at the issue of a vehicle replacement fund and targeting our utility vehicles for that portion of the utility replacement fund. So just wanted to bring those issues up. Again, our request this morning is to ask for your permission to put this parameters resolution on Monday night's formal agenda. more available to answer any questions you might have, Mayor, Council.
Seems reasonable to me. The question I have is the utility system revenue bonds, any savings has to stay in the utility system or not?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
It does. Okay. That's why
there can be a ripple effect to other funds, of course, given the circumstances of the cities, the way things are transferred. Yeah. But I just wanted to tell you, yes, the savings would be realized in the utility fund.
Right. We've had a 25-year budget, and we've talked about equipment maintenance replacement, where we couldn't do it. So I would like to do this in the context of looking at that prioritization of where we want the money spent. And, you know, utility vehicles are important, but I'm not sure that there aren't some other more critical needs someplace else. So I'm just not sure.
And, Mayor, just on that point, we had identified funding in our forecast to identify to replace vehicles across the system, both utilities as well as non-utility general fund vehicles. If this helps us allocate those funds specifically on the utility side, it does then help, if you will, take some of the pressure off what we can then use for the general fund side.
All right. Okay. Questions, comments, Rex?
The potential $3 million savings is similar to refinancing your house, I assume. You just get the lower rate and you save some of the...
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, yes, that's the case, except typically with your house you're seeing a reduction in monthly payments or annual payments. In this case, we are... how we've structured this deal, if I may, is just to... We have a set of debt service out there right now respective to these bonds that we're refinancing. We are going to maintain those exact same annual requirements, except in this fiscal year, we're going to take the entire $3.8 million in savings. So in that effect, it's like you did a refinancing on your house, but then you don't have to pay for a year. But all your payments will go back to being the way they were after that. That's exactly what we're doing here.
Okay. And so that was my next question, was over what period of time is the savings? So savings is upfront, 1 year, put it into something that would save us money over the maintenance operations. If you replace old air conditioners or something, we're spending a lot of money on repairs now, or trucks that are breaking down. This would save us over a period of maintenance on the side.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, yes, that's the case. And one of the reasons that we wanted to make sure that we had this deal occur in December again is that in order to achieve all the savings in this fiscal year, we really need to negate the interest payment on January 1 that's relevant to the refunded debt. So that's one of the reasons I'm pushing this through. Also, if we wait until after then, which market circumstances may make us wait till then. I'm not, we're already jinxing it by identifying what we're going to spend the money on, but I tried to discourage Brian. that's one of the factors, is that we have to get things done by the end of December.
It's the same term, basically?
Yeah, nothing's going to change as far as the existing debt service. The payments will be the same. The difference will be the interest and principal components will be different. But otherwise, the total amount's not going to change.
Thank you.
Buddy.
Larry, are you wearing your lucky socks?
I don't know.
We'll
find out next week.
Will you wear them when you go out to pitch for us?
I wear my lucky suit. I know one made a comment about me finally wearing a suit to the council meeting.
I appreciate the work that you've done for us through the years. I mean, you really have kept your eyes open for opportunities for us, and you have. I don't think that the people who live in Mesa have any idea how many millions of dollars you have realized for the city of Mesa and what a difference it's made. And I'm very, on behalf of them, whether they realize it or not, I'm very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Walters, I appreciate that. That's our job. That's why you have us employed here, is to make sure that we act on these opportunities.
Tom.
And along that line, I just want to point out that there's about $1.2, $1.3 million of cost of issuance, underwriting fee, and bond insurance premiums that are already calculated and taken out before we talk about this $3.8 million.
Right. We calculate everything on a net basis after all those payments are.
I know you do. You understand that. We read it here because there's a little footnote 3. I think it's important for the people to understand that this $3.8 million in savings isn't going to be eaten up by your fees or the bond insurance fees or any of that stuff. Is already calculated into it.
Yeah, I've already eaten up all I can eat up.
Right. Well, you're going to eat as much as you can.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
It is the holiday season. We should know that.
That's true. It's important for people to know that it's a net situation.
It is a net savings.
It's most of it's the bond insurance premium. I wanted to make that clear on TV also.
Pardon me?
I said most of it's the bond insurance premium.
No, I know. I didn't break it down. I wasn't. Would you like me to? I mean,
no,
I I can tell the people exactly how much you're going to make on this if you'd like, but that's not the point. The point is that there is a still a huge saving after all those expenses are incurred, and that's what makes it worthwhile for us to do.
And Councilmember Rouse, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Rouse, one other point here is the underwriter of these bond, this bond issue is the same underwriter we selected last May, if you recall, when we were going to take on the other refunding issues. This is a continuation of that selection process, and they're ready to go next week.
Okay, good. I think we have an agreement to move it forward, to put it on the agenda.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Okay, Council. Thanks. Good to see you.
Item number seven is hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. I know we had the Queen Creek joint meeting last night. I appreciate everyone's attendance. I thought it was pretty interesting when we saw their traffic counts and how much they're being impacted by the growth out in Pinal County. So they want to, their roads in their city are adequate to accommodate their own traffic, but the pass-through traffic is putting quite a burden on them. Anyone have any updates? Rex? Go ahead, Scott.
Well, three of us attended the an SRP tour. It was more than just a tour, of course. We looked at their facilities and also had a few hours of discussion on providing power and communications and issues to Mesa. A particular interest to me, of course, is the Williams Gateway region. We're going to need more power out in that area, the Browning substation. We're going to have some changes made. They're building a wall. For those who live near there, that was built without a wall. I know it's just architectural, but that'll help with the visual impact there. But we're going to try to involve SRP, DMB we had talked about here a little bit earlier, involving them on the process, but get SRP involved in the process as well for bringing their lines in to supply this area. It's a huge area, no power, no infrastructure down there. And having them in on the process early to locate their facilities and their lines will be beneficial. We also noted, I'd like to mention that our city manager did a heck of a job trying to convince them that we need about, how much was it? Are we losing in
$800,000
a year in lieu money that we don't get? Because Mesa doesn't have a property tax, which is good for business, but we'd lose out some money with them. He failed. But he did try. It was a good
effort. I haven't stopped.
He's not stopping. He's not stopping. So there is a significant amount of money out there. I know in the future we may be talking about our bonds going forward, our general obligation bonds with a secondary property tax. We are still... he's still talking to them about in lieu, should those pass if the voters decide that that's the route that they want to go. So, but it was an interesting tour and a lot of work to be done out there.
Rex.
Besides Queen Creek and the SRP and flying over the water, the lakes looked much healthier than they did 4 years ago when we flew over them. They were down to mud. So, yeah, they had white caps on them this time. Monday met with the British Council on some key investors they want to bring to our city to do some things. They also have a large company that does toll roads and construction management. So I turned that over to Brian Raines. Tuesday was over at the Art Center. The Mana Club works very hard with the business community to raise money for Save the Family, for very desperately needy families, and it was a very good event. And it was not too cold outside. Luckily, it was not last night.
Buddy?
Thank you, Mayor. Last Friday evening, I was representing the city at the turning on of the lights at the LDS Temple. There was a gentleman who was a staff sergeant in Iraq who had just returned home. He had been selected by, I believe, the Department of the Army to be the person who would represent the military in turning on the lights, and it was really quite touching to see him standing up there with his wife and his holding his daughter, whom he had not seen, he had seen them in the last couple of days, but he had been away from his family for quite some time, and to be able to acknowledge his service, representative of the service of so many in our country. I also attended an event on, I want to say it was Monday or Tuesday, and all the days start to flow together, at Banner Baywood, Banner Heart Hospital, to thank the volunteers who had helped with the grand opening event out there. It exceeded their wildest expectations, and there was a lot of work that went in on the part of their volunteers, and they really have a very large cadre of volunteers. They still are dealing across the medical industry with shortages in nurses. I think the real holdup there appears to be there aren't enough people to teach new nurses. And it's become a challenge that they're trying to address at the community college and other university levels. But they have been able to hire people to staff up to their needs right now with the beds that they have open. Hopefully come January, we'll still be there when we have that big influx of even more visitors. And then Tuesday evening, I was at Mesa Grande Community Alliance. Hard for me to say enough good about these folks because I still remember the first meeting I went to when back in around 2000, I think, 1999, somewhere there were about four people attending the meeting, and they routinely have now 20, 25, 30, 40, depending on what is going on, people who are involved. And the survey that they have just finished is showing that there is growing optimism in West Mesa about good things happening in West Mesa trending in the correct direction. And those are the kinds of things we'd like to see.
Good. Kyle.
I know sometimes it sounds routine, but because we don't mention it, but like Tuesday morning, the United Way board meeting, I was there with Clyde. There's so many things that we are going through that we don't report because it just seem routine. We're meeting with developers. We're meeting with neighborhood folks, and there's a lot going on. My wife sometimes wonders if I'm ever going to stop and work and earn a living, but it really is great to work with so many people. We have a lot of things going on, and I appreciate my fellow council members for all the time they put in on so many things. We can't sit and report everything here, but there is so much that we are able to participate in, and we get to work with wonderful people throughout the city.
Okay. The next item is scheduling the meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. We have the December 4th. Study session and council meeting. I think the study session, all we need, we'll be reviewing is the agenda again, so we probably could start at 5:15. Does everybody feel comfortable with that? We'll just be reviewing the agenda. So, and then Wednesday, December 6th, we want to let the council know that we will be having a ribbon cutting. We want to make it official that we've actually opened up the new buildings. It's open the municipal building, but where building safety is. We've gone through the remodeling. We want to have a time to celebrate so the employees know that we are officially open and everybody knows that we've essentially completed the majority of the remodeling and it's open for business and we're ready to go. So that will be on December 6th at 10 a.m. at the municipal building over at building safety. Then we'll have the study session for December 7th. Has been canceled. We have a few of the council members who will not be in town that day, but instead we have enough of the council members here. We'll be having our GDC meeting, council committee, general development committee meeting at 8 a.m. that Thursday, December 7th. And then Thursday, December 14th, we'll have a study session at 7:30, and that will be followed by an audit and finance committee meeting. And then our final council meeting of this calendar year will be December 18th, and then our final study session for this year will be December 21st. Thank you.
Okay. Claudia.
Mike Whalen and I are participating in a fundraiser on Monday, so I may be staggering into the meeting. It actually is it's a golf fundraiser. I have never played golf that did not involve windmills or dragons or very small children, and so I have been dragged into this, and I have been assured that Mike Whalen will prop me up as we go around from and show me how to swing the clubs and everything. But ibuprofen will be on the menu on Monday, I think.
There you go. Good luck.
Yeah.
Do we have any requests to speak?
I have none, Mayor.
Okay. Then the study session is adjourned. I do need to call to order a special council meeting for the purposes of convening an executive session. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? We are then in executive session to talk with the city attorney.